is going on out there, everybody? And thank y'all again so very, very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And I'm not alone. Today, I have a very special guest. It's really happy to be in this cool weather, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios, enjoying the cool weather. We got a ton of rain.
Oh, it's crazy.
I mean, like 6 inches in 24 hours. It's insane. I mean, it's a drought.
You can hear it in his voice.
It's a drought.
The golden-throated pitch man for expanded perspective.
I wanted the rain, but can we not get 6 months worth of rain in one night?
Like, no, absolutely not.
Feast or famine around here, right?
Exactly.
It was 80 degrees the other day. Now it's going to be wintry mix tomorrow.
Yeah, I love it.
It's crazy how fast it just comes out of the blue.
So last night when the rain broke, you know, it was pretty late. It was like 11:30 or so whenever it finally quit misting and sprinkling and all that. I went outside, started shooting my bow, right? Because I told you I've been shooting in the evenings, and I get out there and I get my lights on. I start shooting. I felt the cold winds hit. Right, like you could feel that northern really blow in good, and that's when I'm like, yeah, I better go back inside.
Yeah, well, and I got a new phone here.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't figured out how to work it all yet, but yeah. Remember I was complaining about how my phone wouldn't quit roaming and searching for cell towers and Wi-Fi networks and stuff, so I took it to the shop.
They said, sorry.
They looked at it, and they said, yeah, it's a software issue. And I was like, you know what? It's kind of weird how there's been an update on my phone that I've refused to do for like the last 6 months. I finally do the update, and now my phone don't work. That's a clever plan to get you to buy another phone,
classic,
don't you think?
Classic move.
I don't want to be the conspiracy theorist, but I think every time they send you an update, they're like slowing down your phone, making it want to give up the ghost, so you have to go buy another one.
I know you don't want to be the conspiracy theory guy, but you're so good at it.
Well, I know. Yeah. Yeah, very good at it.
So, also, you need to go ahead and fill the good people in. The fact that you've been hunting, that you killed.
Yep.
I wouldn't say you killed the 6-point.
I helped.
Yeah. Unwillingly.
The other day, I was going down a new loop that they've opened up in the town, and a fella going the opposite direction coming towards me hit a deer, knocked it in the air, and if I hadn't slammed my brakes on it, it would have come through my windshield, but I just ran over it with my car, and it kind of messed up the front fender. But
man, I wished you had a dash cam for that.
Me too, right?
Dude, that'd have been so cool.
If I was in Russia, I would, because I guess everybody has a dash cam in Russia for whatever reason. Have you noticed that?
Because it's the Wild West over there.
I guess.
Kyle, you texted me yesterday, and you were like, I just hit a deer. And I thought that it was somewhere else. I didn't realize it's literally like a few miles from the house. And then you just got it smoked and
thrown at me like a hot potato.
Dude, that'd have been so bad.
It was kind
that'd
of freaky.
Awful.
It messed up the other guy's truck bad. There was debris everywhere, and then they just kept going. They didn't stop to check on me. Luckily, some other nice folks did stop and check. And was like, "Man, are you all right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm fine." They're like, "That was insane. Well, I've never seen a deer go that high."
Well, he's texting me. I just realized I never ask him if he's okay, because if you're texting me, you're okay.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have to ask that. I know.
If you can move your thumbs, if you can speak, you're
all
right.
Are you good? Yeah. You're good. All right. We're fine. Rub some dirt on it. Let's go.
It was pretty strange.
So it's been a pretty wild week.
It has.
To say nonetheless, it's been a wild, crazy week. I'm going to start off this wild, crazy week with a story that I've got for you that I think you're going to enjoy. Also, too, big ups. Happy birthday to our homie Lon.
Yeah.
At Phantoms and Monsters. Lon Strickler, boy, howdy. I hope he has a wonderful birthday. Lon sent this over because, again, y'all know how he does me with headlines, right? And, of course, I have to share them with Kyle. This is the first thing that jumped out at me. A 4.5-inch tall cicada man. Four and a half inch. Sounds like you. A cicada man encountered in a Pittsburgh area mall. A mall, folks.
They still have those?
I don't think so. I think this was back in 2008 when this actually happened, when it all went down, in April of 08. From Uniontown, Pennsylvania. This is what it says. She and her husband were at the now abandoned Century 3 Mall in West Mifflin, PA. Is that like part of the Dunder Mifflin? I don't know. Her husband was sitting on a bench in the mall. Barbara went to the men's department in JCPenney. This might be Larry. It's what this might be, right? So here we go.
She went to Gadzooks to pick out a new Halloween outfit.
Topic. Yeah. To Lids to get a new cap for her husband. It says, while there, she saw a creature that looked like an alien or extraterrestrial. There was another woman present with her young children. Now, she says they were rushing out of the area. Her son said, "I want to see it." But her mom said, "No, you can't. Let's go now." Barbara saw a gray man, approximately 4.5 inches tall, wearing a red and black plaid shirt and blue pants. Sounds like it was little Fred Bear. Said he was standing by a clothes rack.
It's a tiny Dan Fitzgerald.
A little Dan. She saw his profile and then looked away. And when she looked back, he's now facing her. She described him as being male with no hair, gray skin, almond black eyes, with lumpy, heavily wrinkled face. She said the face was not human, and it looked somewhat like that of an insect. And when she looked away again, because it's not polite to stare, she looked back, he's gone. She went to the register to ask for security, but nobody was around. She wasn't afraid and said that the little man had a pleasant smile on his face. She decided to leave the store because she and her husband were planning to attend a movie. Barbara tried to tell her husband, but he told her to tell him after the movie. Right? Don't bother me, Barbara. I'm tired of listening to your lip. I'm going to finish this, but I'm just going to go ahead and interject here. Barbara might be prone to really harassing her husband with a lot of things, which might be the reason he said that. I don't know. But it says that she recalled sitting in a dark theater in the rear by the exit door, and that every time the door opened, she'd look to see if the creature was there, and she was starting to get freaked out. Now, she goes on to say that she completely forgot about the encounter and never told her husband until 2 months later when she saw the UFO in an article, or a UFO article, in the Tribune Review. It seemed to jar her
memory. How would you forget that you saw a 4.5-inch tall man?
Well,
at the mall, how does that just slip your mind?
Well, it's funny because she said that she had a tremendous memory and can tell details some years ago, but surprised that she repressed this memory. She believes that when the creature was staring at her, it made the memory fade away. Since Barbara said that the newspaper article mentioned a UFO sighting in Jefferson Hills right near the mall at the same time she had her experience, and that she now refers to the alien being as Cicada Man.
I don't think it sounds extraterrestrial at all. I think it sounds more fey-like,
right? Sounds very fey-like.
Like a gnome.
What she describes, though, is more of an alien gray. No hair, gray skin, almond black eyes, leathery face. It kind of describes that. But my thing is...
And it smiled at her?
4.5 inches tall. That's a lot of detail to pick up at 4.5 inches.
I would have kicked that thing against the wall hard.
Raid! And just sprayed it down.
Stomped on it, something.
Ran.
She went and told a security guard. How do you tell a security guard you just saw a 4.5-inch tall cicada man wearing flannel shirts and
that's a good point.
Pants?
Good thing there was no security around, or they'd have hauled Barbara away.
Yeah, but one of those shirts with the long sleeves on it.
Yeah, the tie in the back. Here's what's crazy. I often wonder now after hearing that, if let's just all agree real quick, this is real. This is 100% a thing, okay?
All right.
How many of those things could be around you at any moment? That's what makes it seem when Infinite. You start touching on Fey, think about it.
What was it doing at the mall in the JCPenney's?
Well, I guess it knew malls were closing soon and it had to get over there and get something.
I guess.
The food court was always good. You get your Panda Express on while you're hanging out there, then go pick you up some shoes, maybe a
and you can tell their Cinnabon. Age. The woman's name is Barbara. I mean, nobody names their kid Barbara anymore.
Is it just Barb?
I don't even do that.
Man,
Barbie, maybe.
You know, I feel bad. Barbara was the one that still people forget about that got taken out in the first season of Stranger Things.
That was her name?
Barbara. Wasn't that her? The one that got into the upside down, then she got killed at the pool? That's Barbara. Everybody forgot about Barbara.
That season one was like 10 years ago. I don't remember that.
Stop. So anyway, Cicada Man. So keep your eyes open, folks. There may be 4.5-inch tall aliens around at any and every moment.
Very, very likely. Check this out. It says this story takes place in Pleasant Hills, Pennsylvania, Cam.
Hey.
Which is in Allegheny County, south of Pittsburgh. I grew up there and had a friend who lived about 1.5 miles away from me. We didn't drive back then due to poor decision making, so we had to walk everywhere.
I've done a lot of that in my life.
I'd walk down past the local borough building, cut up through the woods, and come out on the other side. It was a shortcut to bypass the huge hills we have to walk up and down. The beginning of the hill started in Pleasant Kingdom, a playground for kids that sits back off the road in the woods with tennis courts, basketball, and typical ground stuff. We used to sled ride there because the hill was pretty massive on the back side. That hill led to an opening of our shortcut. We were walking to my house one night, and we were almost clear of the woods. It was pitch black, but we could see the playground lights at the bottom, about 100 yards away, when we heard a disgusting sound to our right. It sounded like something was eating something else and making crazy, wild animal noises, but with a human-like undertone. I could hear the tree limbs shaking, but could not see anything. We bolted the last 100 yards downhill to the bottom and scratched our heads. We had no idea what it could have been, but thought it might have been a bear. We weren't into Bigfoot back then, so it never crossed our minds. The only light was coming from the parking lot lights. It was me and my friends, Steve and Jose. Jose was good at fist fighting, and we were basically afraid of nothing, especially when we were together. We were just about to turn the corner to walk the path behind the borough building to my street. For whatever reason, we all looked over our shoulders, and Steve said, "What in the heck is that?" We all saw it walk across the pavilion, upright from left to right, and hide behind a nearby tree. It was about 100 yards approximately, and up the hill in the dark. But the light from the parking lot illuminated it enough that we could all see a tall, gray-colored animal-like man walk across the pavilion. Its head was level with the pavilion roof, so it was easily 8 foot tall. We stood and watched, and then it simply peeked out from behind the tree as if to get its eyes on all of us. At that moment, we all turned and ran as fast as we could to my house. We stopped short and looked at each other and asked, "Why are we running?" It's like it telepathically jumped into all of our minds and said boo, and made 38-year-old men turn and run like babies without even knowing what we had just seen. None of us knew what it was, but it bothered us for weeks, until one day Steve said, "I think I know what we saw. I think we saw Bigfoot." It clicked immediately. I knew right there that I wasn't crazy, and that we had definitely seen and heard a Sasquatch. I would tell people, my family and friends, but nobody believed us. But it affected me enough that I would join the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. I would go on investigations to interview witnesses of reports, take pictures, and walk the sites. I have a lot of pictures, still, from some of the interviews I was on. I came to realize that Pleasant Hills is built on abandoned coal mines, and to find out that they travel the miles to stay out of sight. Pleasant Hills is not a rural area. There are houses and neighborhoods everywhere, but there are large woods between these towns that separate each other. This is the main reason people have a hard time believing my story. I know what we saw. Steve and I are both very much into Sasquatch. Thanks for everything you do, Tyler.
Awesome.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It wasn't until you described that they were all in their late 30s. I thought from just reading the story that these were like teenagers or kids.
Yeah.
But they're not. These were grown men.
That's wild. But I'm grown too, though, man. I'm not lying.
Oh, yeah. But, out. You've mentioned this before in these areas like Kentucky, Pennsylvania, places where there are lots of abandoned mines. Maybe these things are living in there.
It'd be easy to move into.
Or traveling from one location to another. You've talked about the huge networks, the cave systems up in the Northeast. They're literally everywhere. Anyways,
it'd be a good place to hide out.
Very.
For sure.
Very cool story. Well, speaking of stories, I've got some strange ones for you.
Woohoo!
Let's take a break. And when we get back, I'm going to be talking about some scary encounters that took place in the woods. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. It's that time of year once more. A season that outdoor enthusiasts like Cam and I eagerly anticipate. You see, we're passionate hunters, and every deer season, we find ourselves deep in the woods pursuing game. However, amidst the serenity of the forest, my mind often drifts to the peculiar tales I've come across, whether through word of mouth, on other podcasts, through emails from listeners, through books I've read. These stories encompass a wide spectrum, from UFO sightings to, you guessed it, encounters with Bigfoot. But not just that, Wendigos, rakes, skinwalkers, and a host of other enigmatic phenomenon. It's during those solitary moments in the dark woods that these eerie narratives tend to resurface in my thoughts. I can't help but ponder the fate of the countless missing individuals, particularly fellow hunters, who disappear each year in the vast expanse of national forests, public hunting lands, and beyond. What transpires in the wilderness and what experiences await those who venture into the unknown? I don't know. It's shocking that in the United States alone, the staggering number of people who go missing each year, as reported by the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, exceeds 200,000. Fortunately, a significant percentage, ranging between 89% and 92%, is eventually recovered, either alive or deceased. However, when it comes to disappearances in the wilderness, there is a notable lack of comprehensive tracking data and oversight, they some say, by government agencies, such as the Department of the Interior and the Department of Agriculture's U.S. Forest Service. Ironically, some of the most reliable information on missing persons in remote wilderness areas comes from a rather unexpected source: Bigfoot hunters. In 2011, David Pilates, the founder of the North American Bigfoot Search, initiated a database specifically focused on wildland disappearances occurring under what he terms mysterious circumstances. According to Pilates' research, there are currently approximately 1,600 individuals who are missing in the wilds of the United States, although this figure is approximate and subject to change. Pilates' data highlights some chilling patterns. Most of these missing people vanish in the late afternoon, often coinciding with severe weather conditions. Curiously, their bodies are frequently discovered in areas that have been previously searched, sometimes without clothing or missing footwear, even when hypothermia can be ruled out as a cause. It's noteworthy that people in late stages of hypothermia might feel hot and begin to remove clothing. Additionally, children are sometimes found at seemingly impossible distances from where they went missing originally. Now, we've covered David's books, Missing 411, numerous times on our show. We've been a big fan, probably since the beginning. However, the biggest obstacle in obtaining information about these missing individuals, according to Pilates, is the bureaucratic red tape of the National Park Service. He speculates that the Park Service might be concealing essential data about how and where people disappear and how many are truly found, perhaps out of concern that revealing the truth could deter visitors. So what becomes of the majority of these missing individuals? Their fates can be attributed to various factors. Some are just accidents. A significant number of the missing individuals are found to have met their end due to an accident, often unrelated to encounters with feral humans in national parks. Many succumb to exposure, falls, or in rare cases, animal attacks. Notably, the final stages of hypothermia can cause individuals to shed clothing, resulting in bodies being found with less clothing than they initially had. Lost individuals often attempt to climb to high vantage points in search of getting their bearings, which can tragically lead to fatal falls. Some individuals are found in areas that have been previously searched, and children are occasionally discovered at remarkable distances located from their last known whereabouts. Other circumstances involved kidnappings. The haunted case of Dennis Martin, a 6-year-old who disappeared in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park in Tennessee on June 14, 1969, has fueled chilling speculations. Dennis vanished while playfully trying to startle his family by hiding in the bushes, but he never returned. Despite an extensive search effort, which included 1,400 people, including the National Guard and Special Forces, he was never found. Two sets of footprints were discovered, one matching Dennis's shoes, the other barefoot. Sparking rumors, of a possible kidnapping by, believe it or not, a feral person. Also, some people go missing due to murder. While cases of murders in national parks and federal lands garner significant attention, it is crucial to consider the broader scale. These incidents may capture headlines, like the tragic stabbing of Ronald Sanchez Jr. while hiking the Appalachian Trail, or the high-profile case of Gabby Petito, whose body was found in Grand Teton National Park. However, it's essential to recognize that these instances are part of a larger landscape. Millions of people hike the Appalachian Trail each year, and the numbers of individuals living in vans or RVs in remote areas has likely increased, especially in the wake of the pandemic. Understanding the factors and complexities behind these disappearances remains a challenging endeavor, and it's an issue that continues to haunt those who explore the Great American Wilderness. But what if it's something else? Something more sinister. Something demonic. Otherworldly. Something not of this dimension. Consider the possibility of something far more ominous, even of a diabolical or otherworldly nature. What if these experiences transcend the realms of our understanding, evading the boundaries of this dimension and our terrestrial existence? On today's show, I'm going to be talking about some very strange sightings, as well as listening to some very bizarre and unexplainable encounters in the woods. Let's begin. This first clip is from a hunter, a man named Mike Woolley. And he's a hunter that was in Louisiana just having a normal hunt when he encountered something unusual. His story is compelling. Let's take a listen.
My name is Mike Woolley. I'm from Keechaw, Louisiana. I had an encounter back in December of 1981 with a Bigfoot while deer hunting. It was a beautiful December day, perfect weather for a hunt. Temperature was about 30 degrees. I got to my deer stand that evening about 3 o'clock, got on it. And I was sitting there, and I was facing to the north. And my deer stand was located about a mile and a half down an old logging road and off the main highway, secondary highway. And what I would do, I would park my truck halfway down the logging road, and I would walk in the rest of the way because I didn't want to drive my truck down and spook the deer. Well, it must have been, I hadn't been there more than 30 minutes, and this little young doe deer come running from the east out of some briars and brush that there's no way a human could walk through that. But she come up to my deer stand, and what was so amusing, come up to my deer stand and laid down, up and actually touching the deer stand. She was wringing wet with sweat. She had been run, something had been running her. And the first thing hit my mind, it was a big buck. And I said, I'm gonna kill me a big buck. So when I raised my head back up, I was turning my head and out of my peripheral vision, I seen something hop to a tree. And it was tall, about 7-8 foot tall, and it was black, real hairy, like a gorilla. And I knew it wasn't a gorilla because there was no circus in town, and I knew it hadn't escaped, and I knew we didn't have no gorillas running loose. So the first thing hit my mind, it was somebody dressed up in a suit trying to scare me off my good deer hunting spot. Well, I immediately go to talking to this thing, telling it, you know, take the head off, get out of here, you know, don't come back. You know, this ain't no joke. I don't find it funny. You know, just leave. Well, this thing was just eyeballing me, you know, looking at me and really giving me some sinister looks. And I knew right then, I said, you know, something ain't right. Well, this went on for a few minutes, and he must have been about 20 yards from me, 15, 20 yards. So I take my rifle. I've got a high-powered rifle with a high-powered scope on the rifle. And I looked through the scope at the creature, and I knew that after looking at it, I was in a situation because it was cold, you know, the moisture was coming out of its mouth, its nostrils. It looked really, really human. The face was human. The eyelashes, I could see the eyelashes, you know, the eyes, the teeth were big, big teeth, flat teeth like our teeth. I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it, and it just, it's really PO'd at me. And it lets out a roar like a lion. Well, about 100 yards to the northeast, there's this really, really loud whistle comes back, you know, a signal to the growl. Well, this creature looks over that way and whistles back in the same tone of whistle, and then turns and looks at me. Well, I'm kind of like, hey, you know, what's going on here? You know, something's up. I'm in trouble, big trouble. Well, all of a sudden I hear movement coming from that direction, and I knew whatever he signaled was coming to meet up with him. And I knew that I was probably going to be the one going to be on the losing end of the stick, you know. Well, I thought it was a feral human because I'd heard about him, you know, done some reading about them. But so far as a Bigfoot, I thought that was something that existed out in California. I just thought that was something somebody made up to make money off of. Well, I jumped down off my stand, and I'm running to the west to get to my truck. And I look over my left shoulder, and this creature is running through the woods, and it is just moving brush. It's running through the brush, and it's bulldozing the brush down. And I knew, man, this thing is going to get me. It is mad. It is PO'd. It's going to get me. Well, I'm coming up on my truck, and I'm thinking, well, I got to stop to unlock my truck. And when I get ready to unlock the truck, he's going to make his move. He's going to have me. Well, something crossed my mind to fire a warning shot. Well, when I got to the tailgate of the truck, I threw my rifle to the left, pulled the trigger, and the shot fired, and the bullet hit about 7 foot up in a tree and blew bark in front of his face. The bark actually hit him in the face because he was about 3 foot from the tree. If the creature would have been another 2 seconds, the bullet would have hit him dead in the head. Well, I got in a truck, I'm driving off, I look in my rearview mirror, and lo and behold, his buddy that he had signaled had been tailing me coming up the logging road. I didn't have one chasing me, I had two. Well, they kind of stood there and looked at each other as I was driving off. But my recommendation to anybody, if you ever have an encounter in the woods, is don't fool with them, don't make eye contact, don't point, and surely don't point a gun. Do not engage this creature, because if you do, you will lose. I didn't shoot it, it was just too human. The face, it was a bipedal. You know, it walked on two legs, just like we did. But it was just too human. The face was too human. The eyelashes, the teeth, the jaw structure, the forehead, it was light brown. The face was light brown, like it had a dark suntan. But I couldn't pull the trigger because something told me this ain't right. It's not the right thing to do.
You hear stories like Mike's all the time. The hunter doesn't want to shoot because it looks too human. They don't want to go to prison for the rest of their life because of misidentification. What would you do if placed in that situation? Check out this story. This is a tale passed down through my ex, her father, an eyewitness, and her former brother-in-law, all of whom were known for their honesty and not given to any exaggeration. The story takes place in the Appalachian woodlands of central Pennsylvania, roughly 3 decades ago, during the mid-1980s. My ex-brother-in-law was an ardent outdoorsman, deeply connected to the natural world, and well acquainted with hunting, fishing, trapping, boating, camping, basically everything in the woods. On one fateful day during early archery season, he ventured into the forest in pursuit of white-tailed deer. Having successfully tagged a sizable buck some distance from the family cabin, he promptly gutted the deer and initiated a long trek back to the cabin. Determined to reach camp before darkness, that's what his plan was. What occurred next, as he recounted, was both puzzling and alarming. Approximately 15 minutes into his journey, he noticed the unsettling presence of something trailing behind him. He said that the woods got completely quiet. There was no sounds, and he felt the presence of something, even though he could not see it. As he continued, the certainty grew that something was shadowing his every step. The animal, or whatever it was, seemed to have homed in on the scent of the deer's blood. Though the area was known to be inhabited by various wildlife, including mountain lions, bears, bobcats, coyotes, and the such, the pursuit didn't align with any of these creatures. With every passing moment, his pursuer appeared to be closing in on him. In a moment of desperation, he made a daring decision. He actually hoisted the deer onto his shoulders and pushed himself to move as quickly as the rugged terrain would allow. About halfway through his frantic dash, a bone-chilling howl erupted from the direction he had shouldered the deer. His heart raced. Adrenaline surged through his veins, and he raced towards the cabin. Even leaping across a creek with the buck still in tow. All the while, growls and screams, punctuated by loud cracks and pops that sounded akin to gunshots, resonated behind him. Upon reaching the camp, he encountered the others who had already returned and were listening to the loud sounds outside. They promptly hung the deer in the shed, locked it away, and barricaded themselves in the cabin. The cacophony continued intermittently for nearly an hour, originating from various points around the cabin, before silence finally descended. Needless to say, none of them had a restful night. The following morning, they embarked on an expedition to the area where the initial screams and sounds had erupted, hoping to discern signs that might reveal the identity of the creature responsible. The rocky, unyielding ground offered no definitive tracks. However, they stumbled upon an inexplicable sight within a dense thicket of mountain laurel. Not more than 15 yards from where he had shouldered the deer, there was this perplexing discovery. In the midst of this tough, fibrous, and pliable wood of the laurel, an area measuring approximately 20 feet by 20 feet had been torn apart. This type of wood was nearly unbreakable, yet the laurel had been twisted, snapped, and torn as though it were fragile twigs. There were no claw marks, no teeth marks, antler or horn impressions, nor any signs of a saw or a hatchet were found. Just splintered wood, ripped, and shattered mountain laurel. Some of which was as thick as 2 inches. Whatever had caused this devastation was evidently massive, immensely powerful, and consumed by a profound fury. This mysterious encounter in the Pennsylvania wilderness remained etched in their memories as unexplained phenomenon. To this day, nobody knows what chased my ex-brother-in-law. Wow, fascinating story, right? He doesn't know what chased him. You know, like, I guess it could have been a bear. They didn't actually lay eyes on anything, but something pursued him. And I think they're right. I don't think it was a bear. I think it was something else. I got another clip for you. It's pretty cool. Check this out. Back in 2010, two young boys in West Virginia had a very strange experience along the Ohio River. They wanted to go camping in the woods, and they had a run-in with something otherworldly. Let's listen.
This took place in 2010. I grew up on the Ohio River in West Virginia. I had a lot of friends right across the river in Ohio. We pretty much spent almost the entire summer hanging out, especially since I was getting ready to go to college. We'd been talking about it for a long time, about how we wanted to go camping in the woods. One day we were all hanging out. One of us just suggested, hey, we should spend the night in the woods tonight. I had one friend, Zane, that lived next to a pond, next to a very large patch of woods. We decided we were going to go camping right along the edge of the woods. There was me, Zane, and two other friends. So we packed up all the stuff. Hot dogs, stuff for s'mores, some walking sticks. We set up our little fire ring where we were going to build a fire. And then decided to go for a hike. We come back and then build the fire. We're all sitting in our foldable lawn chairs, had our backs to the pond, and we were facing the woods. Probably about 20 feet to the pond, and then maybe 30 feet to the woods in front of us. Most of the night was quiet. We stayed up really late. Sometime between 2 and 3 a.m., I could hear twigs snapping. While I was trying to process that, a stick had come out of the woods and landed close to where we were all sitting. Grabbed our walking sticks. We all just go quiet. Maybe 10 to 20 minutes go by. While we were standing, the second one comes flying out of the woods, and this one actually hits our fire. Spinning like someone had threw it. I saw it coming out of the woods. So I knew it didn't just fall from a tree. Cinders and stuff flying up. So we all jumped back. A couple more minutes of nervous laughter kind of occurs to us that Zane's brother was probably messing with us. It would have been a lot of effort for him to get up in the woods without us seeing him, but it would not have been unusual for him. It wasn't something that was outside the realm of possibility at all. Still standing around the fire, standing around the chairs, waiting for like what his next move is going to be. And nothing happens. We sit back down and I'm thinking maybe he heard us. We're on to him, so maybe he just gave up. We heard some more noises, footsteps in the woods. We ignored it. We're not going to entertain it. He's pranking us. We're just going to ignore it. Another stick comes flying out of the woods. This time, it came from behind a very large tree. This one landed in the fire as well. Zane's brother was a quarterback. It probably would have been easy for him to hit the fire with a stick. And we figure he's just going to keep messing with us. And so Zane and I have these flashlights. We're kind of whispering to ourselves, like, let's go catch him. We'll turn it around on him. We'll try and scare him or catch him. We start to walk towards this tree. This tree is probably 30 feet from where we were sitting. Zane's plan is you go around one side of the tree and I'll go around the other. We'll trap him. I go left and Zane goes right. I was focusing on the tree and looking at Zane, waiting for the cue to turn the flashlight on and jump out. As we're approaching the tree, I saw movement towards the bottom of the tree. I figured that Zane's brother had seen Zane coming from that side of the tree and so was shimmying around towards me without knowing that I was there. I turned the light on. I angled the beam down towards the bottom of the trunk. Sticking out from behind the tree was a leg. It was a very large red leg. Dark red color, kind of like a burnt orange. It was muscular, like patchy fur all the way down. I could see muscle definition, and I could see the tendon and the back of the knee. So it wasn't just obscured, just covered in fur. But there was fur, it was hairy. Patches of long, stringy fur all up and down it. I think I was trying to rationalize in my head what I was looking at. I'm looking at this leg, then it turns and steps behind the tree. And right as it does, Zane yells. Then I realize what I saw was not normal. Not Zane's brother. So then I yell. We turn and run back. As we were running, I remember hearing the sound of something crashing through the woods, like running through the woods. It had to have been running the opposite direction because it was going through the woods. It sounded very large. The guys are asking us, what happened, what's going on? I wasn't the only one that saw it. Like, Zane was over there with me. I can't believe that we just saw that leg. Zane looked at me and he was like, leg? I saw an arm. It was a large red arm. When it moved, it like spread its fingers. And I could see that it was a hand that was gripped on the side of the tree. Its fingers were thick and red. He saw it push off the tree, and that's when he yelled. I'm freaked out. I'm dumbfounded. Even up to this point, it was hard for me to believe and process what I had seen. When he described it the same way, that it was large and red. And not just that, but that he saw the arm, the hand, grip and push off the tree at the same time that I saw the leg turn and go behind the tree. We actually did see something. I wasn't just seeing things because I was scared, or I wasn't just seeing things because it was dark. It was a very adrenaline-fueled, scary 5 minutes because we now don't know what it was. And it's out there. For us to get back to the house, we have to go past where we just saw this thing. We did not want to go past where we saw that thing to get back to the house. We stayed up for most of the rest of the night. We eventually went into the tent and just talked about what it could have been, what we thought it was. And as soon as the sun was up, we ran back to the house. We didn't pack any of the stuff up. We left everything out there. Once we were inside, like, the safety of his bedroom, we all crashed. And we all fell asleep. In Southeast Ohio, they talk about the grass man. Ohio's version of Bigfoot. Growing up right on the Ohio River and with my friends living in Southeast Ohio, like, the grass man was something we had heard a lot about. We were very skeptical, and so I think we were kind of hesitant to say, oh yeah, it was a Bigfoot. We didn't see its face. We got an idea of how big it was. If it's not Bigfoot, I don't know that the alternative is any better. It might be scarier. If it was a person out there messing with us, they would have had to go into great lengths to do that. If it wasn't a person, I genuinely have no idea what it could have been. Something happened that we couldn't really explain. We didn't go in the woods anymore after that. We had friends that were like, no, we should go. Me and Zane were like, no. Like, if you want to go camp over there, that's fine. I'm not going.
There you go. Another Sasquatch sighting, right? Or Bigfoot or something. Very, very creepy. I've got another cool story for you. Check this out. My name is Kathy, and my husband and I faced an incredibly stressful situation back in 1998. And to this very day, I still have trouble wrapping my mind around the strangeness of it all. I was a 41-year-old single woman residing in La Jolla, California, when I met a man named Hector. He was around my age, and I met him during a community cleanup day, an event that was held once per month where people would come together and pick up trash in public places like parks and beaches. I felt like I must have always assumed the best of everyone I met at those gatherings because it seemed that only well-intentioned, selfless individuals would take time out of their busy lives to do that sort of thing. I'm not trying to say that Hector was a malicious man. I'm just implying that I probably assumed everyone who attended those things was perfect and could never attract any kind of trouble my way. I was wrong. At the time, I was working as a receptionist at a veterinarian's office. I'm a huge animal lover, so in that regard, the position was heavenly. Seeing all those lovely pets every day filled me with joy. What wasn't so heavenly was the pay. At least living in California wasn't as expensive back then, so I could still afford a one-bedroom apartment. The place was tiny, but I have to say it had charm and was within walking distance of the water. I can't even begin to imagine what the rent on that place would be now. You probably need to have an arm and leg every month. So I'd been doing the same routine for a few years, and I don't think I even fully realized it at the time how desperate I was to change things up. I needed something fresh. Hector wasn't the most handsome of men, but when he expressed his deep concern for sea life, choking to death on plastic, I knew I was interacting with someone I had a lot in common with. Hector was 5'6", which was an inch shorter than me. Believe me when I say I could never have imagined falling for a man who was shorter than I. I always had chuckled over that sort of thing on rare occasions I came across it. Hector seemed to admire the fact that I worked at the veterinarian's office. And that was when I knew we had mutual respect for one another. It was nice to finally meet a man who wasn't solely concerned with finances. Every guy I had dated before then was so stressed about money. That negative energy had a way of radiating off of them. In truth, I had such consistent bad luck with that kind of thing that it eventually made me lose interest in dating. I couldn't remember a point in my life where I ever felt aligned with a man's energy. I think that's also part of the reason why I ended up sticking to my minimal paying job for so long. I felt a solid connection to animals, something I had never felt with men. But Hector made me feel different right away. There was something about his presence that immediately felt like he could be a trustworthy friend. There wasn't any kind of overwhelming pressure for either of us to come up with ways to try to impress one another. And that was very comforting. One thing led to the next, and within a few months of seeing each other, he approached me about starting a new life together down in Mexico. He said it had always been a dream to own a farm and live in the peaceful countryside, away from the chaos of cities. He said he knew of a property that we could rent to own. At first, I was a bit thrown off by the proposition, but then I had an inkling that it was an opportunity for me to escape what had begun to feel like a very uneventful life. Here was a way for me to spread my wings and try something spontaneous. You know, to take a risk, see where it leads. And on top of that, Hector had what sounded like a very appealing plan. First, he wanted to turn the property into a doggy daycare. That way, we'd be able to get a feel for the land while also earning some money. He said he had already had a good amount of cash saved up that would provide a cushion for us to figure out how we wanted our future farm to evolve. I must have been so attracted to the romantic idea of doing something new that my mind was somewhat willing to ignore the fine details of everything. I wasn't considering that this whole plan could potentially turn into a mess, and that's my fault. I should have been more diligent. I was so excited when we arrived in the new town. Since I still know and respect someone who resides there, I'd rather not disclose the exact location, but I will say that it's only a few hours south of the border. The mountain range that encompasses the place was beyond beautiful. Instantly, I felt like I had made the right choice. There was so much space to do whatever the heck we wanted. If we could eventually afford it, there was plenty of land for horses to roam freely. I was excited. I immediately met a couple named Diego and Alejandra. Both Hector and Diego referred to Alejandra as Al. It turned out that Diego was Hector's slightly older half-brother. It was during that introduction that I felt there might be some tension between the two brothers. Diego was significantly older, and I couldn't help but feel he disapproved of Hector, perhaps due to his past mistakes. I was reluctant to allow any chance of my new life starting off on the wrong foot, so I decided to ignore whatever was going on between the two men. Al and I quickly hit it off, which created a nice distraction from the looming negative energy. Al was the first one to accompany me to pick out a dog from the nearest animal shelter. She also helped me design flyers that we gave to the facility, notifying them that Hector and I were opening a doggy daycare. We wanted all the locals to know that they had a very affordable destination to drop off their pets whenever they were leaving town or working overtime. We came up with a clever name for the business that I wish I could disclose, but it's probably the best that I don't, just in case that can somehow be traced. Our first dog was a yellow lab and beagle crossbreed named Willie. That was already his name when we picked him up. I didn't care for the name, but since the dog was already 5 years old and responded to it rather well, it seemed logical to leave it. Willie appeared to feel right at home. As soon as we let him out of the car, I got the impression that he had never before experienced that much room to run around. A few days after we opened up shop, Diego approached me in private. He handed me a few pages of forms explaining that he was happy to have me as a tenant and felt that he could trust me. The whole thing threw me off. The forms clearly stated the amount we still owed for both the deposit plus the first and last month's rent. Confused, I was about to ask Diego what all this was about when things started to become more apparent. I never doubted that Hector had feelings for me, but that was a separate subject from exaggerating about how much money he had saved up. Perhaps he was even in debt, and he needed a loving partner to help him get back on his feet. Without prying, that was the angle that I chose to view it from. Although I was a tad disheartened, I was also hesitant to cause a stir that would interfere with my exciting transition. And for some reason, I had such a good feeling about the dog daycare business that I assumed that we could fix any financial situation and mend things between Hector and his brother. We had only had Willie for maybe 3 days at the most when I thought he had run away. Neither Hector nor I could find him anywhere. We allowed him to roam the property freely because he was so good about coming to us whenever we called his name. Anyway, a fence encompassed the large property, so he'd only be able to go so far even if he was chasing a wild animal. Hector ended up being the one to find Willie's body. He brought me over with a flashlight. I'm not exaggerating at all when I say that our dog appeared as though he had been it looked like he had the life sucked out of him. And the light color of his fur made it easy to spot two deep puncture marks in his abdomen. He also had several lacerations all over his body, suggesting that there had been a struggle. But nothing was as prominent as those puncture marks. Hector even mentioned how it looked like a vampire had attacked Willie. On top of feeling extremely sad over the loss of our new friend, something made me feel very uneasy about being out there. That was when I began to wonder whether it was wise to be out, especially out there, after dark. That was the first moment I questioned whether I had made the right move by starting a new life in Mexico. Something about seeing Willie's corpse with those puncture marks was simply not right. Hector said whatever he could do to try to comfort me, but I could tell you that he was disturbed by the scene. He claimed to be a man of faith, and later that night, he confessed some things. Hector said he felt guilty about many of his past acts and that demons had lurked around him for years. He interpreted Willie's death as a sign that he might be next on the chopping block, if you know what I mean. The man cried while explaining this stuff to me, and I had to interrupt him multiple times to prevent him from revealing things I'd rather not know. To calm him down, I tried to emphasize that dwelling on the past was counterproductive and that we were currently trying to do a good thing by building several honest businesses. I told him that the only way to move forward was to focus on the tasks at hand, and he seemed to agree. That night was when it became apparent why Diego was skeptical about having his younger brother around. It made me respect Diego a lot more for his willingness to put up with Hector at all. So many people would have seen association with someone like Hector as too big of a risk. I suspect Al had a way of softening the stern man up a bit. We barely had time to consider what had killed Willie when a potential customer called us the following day. They wanted to drop off their two dogs before they left town for the weekend. Without hesitating, I agreed. Even though I was still disturbed, there was no beating around the fact that we needed to make some money. Sure, Diego was acting graciously for the time being, but I knew he'd use any opportunity to kick Hector out. I was desperate to confirm that we'd be able to stay afloat. Our first official patrons were a pit bull and a scraggly mutt that looked like it was part Aussie and part shepherd. I was relieved that there were two of them because I figured a predator would be a lot less likely to approach. It was in the evening when Hector and I heard a barrage of barking. Both dogs had been pretty quiet the entire day leading up until that point. So I knew that there had to be a good reason that they then decided to sound the alarms. At the time, I was actually on the phone with another potential customer, and I politely asked if I could call her back. As Hector and I speedily walked in the direction of the frantic barks, that same overwhelmingly anxious feeling as before washed over me. It became increasingly apparent that something was terribly wrong, and soon I received confirmation why. The mutt ran around the weird-looking creature, keeping a safe distance, hysterically barking and growling as it watched the consumption of the pit bull. To me, the large gray animal looked like a combination between a dog and a pig. From where I stood, it didn't appear to have any hair at all. A long and thin, ratty tail sporadically wiggled from the end of its body. Its back was towards us, but it was only a few moments after we saw that it turned its head to look at us. Even though it didn't seem interested in attacking, its body language warned us not to come any closer. Like most predators, it was willing to do whatever it had to defend its prey. It wasn't long before I noticed Hector was muttering something in Spanish, and I later found out he was praying. To him, this creature was none other than a demon, and he was convinced that he was its primary target. I wanted to do something to help the other dog away from the scene safely, but neither of us was armed. The weird creature glared at us a few times before we finally started backing away. "What's all this noise about?" Diego greeted us once we were nearly back at our house. I told him there's a strange predator out there, and it attacked one of the dogs, which prompted him to immediately fetch a gun and drive his SUV towards the scene. Soon after that, we noticed the constant barking had ceased. I so badly hoped that the other dog hadn't been killed as well. That would have meant three dead dogs within a matter of just a few days. I felt uneasy, but there's no question that Hector was by far the most disturbed. He paced back and forth in front of the house until Diego drove back and informed us that there was nothing there, not even a corpse. I suspected that the predator ran off with its prey when it heard the approaching vehicle. Diego said he couldn't find the other dog either. I had trouble accepting that, so I asked him to drive me back to the scene so I could help search the area. Diego wasn't exaggerating when he said there was nothing, and there was something so ghostly about the place. It was as though you could feel the recent carnage in the air. I woke up the next morning to learn that Hector had fled town. He at least cared enough to leave a note suggesting that I vacate the land before it's too late. He again mentioned his belief that it was a demon that we saw sucking the blood from that dog. He insisted that it was a bad omen, one that suggested he was next. It seemed to me that he thought he would be spending the rest of his days looking over his shoulder. When I informed Diego that Hector had left in the middle of the night, he explained his brother blamed himself for someone's death over 20 years earlier. He didn't go into too much detail, but it sounded like Hector was part of a gang that murdered someone somewhere in Mexico. I have no idea how much involvement he had in the actual act, but something about the event made him think that he would eventually have to pay a terrible price. So, I can kind of see why he would think the appearance of that very demonic-looking beast would scare him enough to leave town. I can't say for sure whether it wasn't an excuse to leave me, but his note stated that I would never be safe as long as he was around me, and I didn't deserve that. According to the note, I had too beautiful of a soul to be anywhere near that kind of darkness. Maybe Alejandra had some influence on the matter, but Diego was kind enough to get rid of the contract that we had signed, saying that he trusted me, but he had fully been prepared for things to fall through on his brother's end. That very next day, I began my move back to California. I know this might sound awful, but I'm so glad I never had to look those dog owners in the eyes and tell them what happened. That would have made things even far more heartbreaking. Unfortunately, Al was probably the one who had to handle that. Of course, I did quite a bit of investigating into what kind of animal that could have been. It wasn't long before I learned about the chupacabra. And that research became so much easier with the advancement of the internet. There are several reports out there near that location that match the description of what Hector and I saw. Some people think it's the physical manifestation of a demon, whereas I tend to lean more towards the theory that it's an undiscovered animal species. Perhaps it has some relation to the vampire bat. I don't know. It's because of that whole experience that I will forever remain open-minded to other people's stories. I don't think I ever would have believed in my encounter had I not been the one to experience it myself. I feel horrible for the dogs that were taken that day, but I like to hope that the one I didn't witness the creature attack was eventually found. I suppose I'll never know. Thanks, Kathy. Well, Kathy, that's an incredible story. A chupacabra. You know, there's several depictions. We live in Texas, so there's a lot of potential chupacabra sightings in this state. And they range, you know, from a hairless-looking coyote to a reptilian-looking creature if you're in Puerto Rico. Like, there's different versions of the chupacabra. Very, very creepy story. Before we leave, I got another story I want you guys to check this out. Now, you know, everybody who follows the show know that me and Cam are both hunters, so this one kind of hits home. This next story I want you to listen to comes from a fellow hunter in East Texas who purchased a new night vision scope in an attempt to hunt feral hogs. Now, this is a common practice here in Texas. In fact, Cam just killed two feral hogs with his recurve just a few days ago. If you go on Instagram, you can see a picture of it, of one of them. He's a real bad man. Feral hogs, if you don't know, are a big problem here in Texas, and they're everywhere. They destroy millions of dollars of crops each year, and there's no limit on how many of them you can kill because they're such a problem. The state just wants them gone, but it'll never happen because a feral hog can have up to 3 litters a year, and each litter has 4 to 10 piglets each time, and they have the ability to start reproducing at only 6 or 8 months old. So they explode, right? They're everywhere. They are mostly nocturnal, and that's why lots of people prefer to hunt them at night, and they use night vision scopes because ordinary scopes won't work. This guy that you're about to hear is one of these guys. He's out here alone in the woods hunting for feral hogs when he runs into something he never expected. Let's listen.
I had always been a hunter. The hobby is pretty expensive. I was always looking for avenues to hunt on a budget. I specifically liked to hunt boar. Boar are an issue in the United States where they produce at a rate that the Department of Fish and Wildlife can't keep up with. They eat up crops. They destroy the wildlife. New Mexico and Texas both allow the hunting of boar with night vision. I had been going down the rabbit hole of researching the base entry scope that I could buy, that I could go and enjoy a night of hunting with night optics. I had found a scope for a good price. I wanted to dip my toes into that facet of hunting. I was initially supposed to go on that hunt with other people. You're supposed to go on them with other people. You'll have people that are all set to go that flake out at the last second. There was a little of that happening. I didn't want to be one to back down from a hunt just because I didn't have other people there to hold my hand. The area that I go hunting, my friends and I enjoyed a lot of leeway with because of the public lands. A lot of lands in Texas are bought up and owned. So it was an area that we could enjoy that not a lot of people had access to. Loaded up my truck, drove out to the spot, managed to use a game trail to get to a spot that I had in mind. I set myself up a perch that I could be in for a prolonged period of time. Got my gear set up, started to find landmarks at different yardages, one at 25, 50, sighting in the area in increments of 25 yards. The area was surprisingly still. Not a lot of things were making noise. I'd been out in that area before. Even at nighttime, there's still a lot of wildlife that's up and active. A lot of things are nocturnal. There are a lot of things that wake up at night. I had my back propped up against a tree for comfort. After a couple hours of that position, I really wanted to do something. There was another area that wasn't exactly better or worse than the spot that I was currently in. Picked up my gear and moved. It gave me something to do at that moment. Maybe I'd see something. Thought maybe if I set up, maybe I'd get another angle. As I set up, I'm glassing the area, setting up new landmarks. I had noticed something moving. I could see it in the brush. Assumed I was looking at a black bear. It was moving dominantly on their hind legs, but still using their front legs to get through foliage. I thought that it was interesting that he was moving in the direction that I had just left. Straight towards my previous spot. He got to the spot that I was just at and the tree that I was just propped up against. I noticed as he got upright, it wasn't a bear at all. It was a person. This person was transfixed with the area that I had just left. He is running his hands up and down the tree, examining the bark. He was smelling the area that I was at. He moved like an animal. He wasn't moving like a person. I could see his form, and as I adjusted my optics to get a better look at him, I saw that he wasn't clothed. He didn't have anything to protect him from getting through the foliage that he was just crawling around through. He was naked head to toe. Once he had gotten done getting the information that he wanted out of that tree, he squatted down and put his palms between his feet and aimed his head straight up, the way that you would imagine a dog or a coyote howls. It's at that moment I heard a voice call out from his direction. A voice that I would never imagine to come from that frame. I thought that I was looking at an adult-age man, but the voice that came from that person was a distinctly female voice. Help. I'm lost. Is anyone there? Please. Everything was rushing through my brain. I felt petrified and confused in the strongest senses of the word. I allow a little bit of time. I had to try to think about what I should do next. I'm trying to understand whether this person is lost. Before I can really get an action out of me, they call out again. Help. I'm hurt. I can't walk. Can somebody help me? That's when everything clicked into me. This person didn't need help. This person could walk. And they were moving through the brush and the foliage better than I could. This person is trying to trick me. What this person is saying isn't true. This person is trying to get me to go to where they're at. I start to get all my gear together frantically. Really needed to get my backpack on, and I needed to get my rifle back up. I needed to keep my eyes on this person that I know that I can't trust. I bring my rifle up, and I get my eyes behind the optic. I see that this person is still in that position, but their head is pointed in my direction. I got that distinct feeling that we were making eye contact. I could see their cheekbones, I could see their jaw, I could see their teeth. All of the details that I would need to see a wide smile across a person's face. Like someone just got a punchline to a joke. At that point, I knew this person was looking for me. This person now had a good idea of where I was. They start to take these long strides towards me. That was all I needed. I was freaking out. Whatever was going to happen next didn't feel like it was going to be good for me. I discharged my rifle and I sent a round sailing over his head. A normal person would run away, be frightened in some way, shape, or form, but he wasn't. He was still transfixed on me. The gunshot that just went off over his head hadn't deterred him. I have no issues with pointing my crosshairs directly on him. We stood there staring at each other for a long time. It felt like an eternity. I was prepared to let that trigger touch off if he continued to come into my direction. Almost like a jump scare out of a horror movie, something had clicked in his head. He bolted to my left. I could not keep him in my scope. I was really struggling. Brush and trees are getting in between he and I. I'm only getting flickers of the white of his heat signature through the tree line. I wanted to let him know, hey, I still see you. So I sent another round into the tree line after him, still very high, in his direction. I wanted to hear the branches crack. I wanted him to know that I know where you're going. I became very aware that the gear that I had on me was not set up to get in a fight with somebody. I really wanted a fresh magazine inside of my gun because it only carries 5 rounds. I was fumbling around looking for a fresh one, and as I dropped the one that was in the weapon, it hit the ground. I didn't even bother looking for it. He was only getting deeper and deeper into the trees, opposite of the direction that I needed to go. I didn't want him to regroup. I didn't want him to get his confidence back. I decided that this was a good opportunity for me to get out of there. I wanted to get to my truck and I wanted to leave. Start to get all my gear together frantically. All of my movements aren't nearly as adept as they usually are. There's no dexterity to what I'm doing. I'm sure I left things behind, but I didn't care. I just really needed to get my backpack on. I start running back to my truck as fast as I can, and I start to hear him. He starts to give off this awful scream. really just wailing into the night. He's not really saying anything. He's not calling out to me. Sounded like if you blended a laugh and a cry together. The sound must have been playing tricks because I couldn't tell if it was coming from left, if it was coming from right. I could swear that it was coming in front of me. 15 minutes to get to where I was at, but I made my way back to the truck in half that time. Seeing that truck was probably one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. I got the keys in the ignition and I backed up and drove back the way that I came as fast as I could. I remember feeling frightened that whole time. This awful feeling of anxiety. It wasn't until my truck got back onto the freeway and I was speeding back towards my house that I got any sense of security. That fight or flight reflex, it's a hell of a drug. It was one of my go-to campfire stories for a very long time until my nephew had heard the story. And he started telling me about Wendigos and rakes and things like that. I think it frightened him that I had never heard of any of that. And I think it frightened him that when I was telling him that story, we were camping. The area that we were camped out that night was the same woods. He refused to stay at that campsite that night. His mom was real upset with me because she had to take him back home. He would not stay out in that campsite that night.
Wow. Very, very creepy. You know, as I reflect on these peculiar and spine-chilling experiences, I find myself grappling with questions of interpretation. Could these accounts be mere misunderstandings or products of a deranged imagination? I find it hard to accept such explanations. The impact these encounters have had on those who have lived through them is undeniable, leaving an indelible mark on their lives, one that they will carry with them for the rest of their lives. Moreover, the unsettling reality of missing individuals in these remote areas cannot be dismissed as mere hallucinations. It is a tangible phenomenon, a grim fact that underscores the mysteries of the wilderness and leaves us with more questions than answers. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting that we should avoid the great outdoors or forsake camping, hiking, and even hunting. God, no. In fact, I'm going hunting in a few hours. However, I can assure you that these stories will linger in my mind as I sit in the dark, alone, with nothing but a recurve bow and 5 semi-sharp arrows. It's only natural to acknowledge that something peculiar is going on in the woods, even though the nature of it remains elusive. It might be a singular phenomenon or a convergence of multiple enigmas occurring simultaneously. The next time you're in the woods, all I'm saying is just be careful. Be mindful of your surroundings. Take precautions, like a firearm, a knife, a satellite phone, or a tracking beacon. Hell, even an AirTag. Something is better than nothing. It's a strange world out there. I hope you've enjoyed these stories. While I'm at it, I'm so glad that we're able to share our passion and these stories of the paranormal. I can't believe we've been doing this week after week for over 10 years now. You know, when I was a kid, I was enamored with television shows like Unsolved Mysteries or In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. My uncles and my father, and I didn't know why. I guess it was fate. I had no clue that one day I would be doing the same thing, and very successfully. Who knows? There might be some kid out there who hears my voice and thinks of me as I once did of Robert Stack, George Knapp, Art Bell, or Leonard Nimoy, and be consumed with strange tales of the paranormal, UFOs, and even cryptid creatures. And that makes me happy. I hope you all are happy, Because of the digital age, my voice will outlive me for sure. My voice will go on and on. For how long? I don't know. I hope many decades after I'm gone, people will still enjoy hearing me share these strange stories, as much as I enjoy telling them, and have as much interest as you and me. Expanding your perspective is a strange thing. I started this journey looking for answers and found none. Only more questions. Perhaps that's what makes this show and life interesting. The search, it's the journey. There will never be any true answers, and that's part of the fun. Thank you so much for listening and helping us make our dreams a reality. We really couldn't do all this without you. You really are the best listeners anyone could ask for. If you really want to help us out, it doesn't take any money. Just like and subscribe and write us reviews on whatever platform you listen to us on. Tell others about our show. Word of mouth really is the best way to grow our show. Let's take a break. I'm Kyle Filson, and this is Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Hey-o.
Very cool stories. Scary, but yet true. You know, there are lots of people that go missing in the national forest, on private land. It doesn't matter, but all in throughout North America and the rest of the world, but especially here in North America, there's a lot of missing people.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, hunters, but campers, people that are all out hiking. They go into the woods and they disappear under mysterious circumstances, never to be found.
It's a big
or heard
place.
From again. It is quite alarming when you think about the sheer number of how many people go missing and what is happening to them. You know, is it all one phenomenon? Is it, oh, all Bigfoot, or is it all alien abduction?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is it Fae? I mean, what is it? I don't think it's one thing. I think it's a collection of different things happening to different people. I mean, is it possible that a person could just be out walking and accidentally walk through a portal? I don't know. We've read stories on the air where people are hiking and they have what they experience is like a time slip where all of a sudden they come upon a old looking town and they walk amongst the streets and the shops and everything. And there's no people there, but the windows look grimy. Everything looks, you know, not looked after and old. And then a few minutes later, they come out of it. And then, like, all the bird sounds return, insects, the breeze, and 2 hours have gone by. And it felt like they were only there for 10 minutes, you know, things like that. Does that happen? And some people can't get back out, like you mentioned earlier, Stranger Things, you know, with the upside down. That's kind of like what they're referring to is there's these parallel dimensions that are similar to ours, but yet different.
Some of it I do know that, you know, like we've talked about, it has been – the tires have been pumped up dramatically on some of the stories, and some of them aren't quite as odd or strange as we know and as you pilfer through those. But there are some that it is truly like the world itself opened up and swallowed them.
Yeah.
And it does feel like when you hear these stories of portals, right, or you know, people claim to see Bigfoot – moving into portals or whatnot, it does make me think about it. And also it makes me think about all the areas when people talk about going hiking and they find all the crazy thing that happens around all of this possible crystals or granite or quartz or any of these crazy things. Like there could be portals there. Like we don't know, but there's odd thing is there's a lot of that in the areas that these people that go missing on national, you know, forest lands in that area. It's also too, a lot of people don't, And you know, everybody might, but you kind of take it for granted from time to time when you really understand just how vast some of that area is.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, because even with me, because I'm like, man, I know that we've seen a lot of this. But when you think about one person out in the middle of some of that area, heavily wooded, we're not talking about anything, but like heavily wooded, it would be hard to find someone. It would be hard to find someone on 500 acres if they were just piled up under the brush somewhere dead.
Right. And people always are like, well, you know, say somebody fell and, you know, they had a compound fracture to the leg. And then, you know, how come we didn't find any of them? You'd be surprised at how fast Mother Nature will take a body and dismember it, disperse it. All the creatures will eat it. I mean, and you won't find the bones unless you know exactly where to look. I mean, otherwise, every time you went out in the woods, it'd be like walking through a bone field.
Yeah, just
you know what I mean. There's, I've seen deer dead, and then 3 days later, there's hardly anything left. And 2 weeks later, you'd never know.
It never was even there. Yeah,
I mean, it's remarkable. Everything from birds to everything will just pick up little bones and carry them off. That one body will be just dispersed.
Well, look at the number of like the squirrels and field mice and rats and all that stuff that will eat the antlers that will try to get to the marrow and the bones, things like the some of the bones you find are, you know, they're not a lot of them. But like you said, it's scattered everywhere. Imagine they don't have clothes. Clothes is the one thing that always ties to
shoes, clothes, something like
but
that.
But if you took them all off, well, then, yeah, I mean, it's basically good luck.
And now it's in a massive forest area.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, they're
with
out there.
More animals to predate on the remains.
Right. So say nothing paranormal happens. Somebody like just fell down into the sun and up expiring out there. Yeah.
Heart attack, whatever. Drops dead on a trail out in the middle of nowhere. By
unless you knew exactly where to look, you know, in a 10,000 acre national park. I mean, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. But then there are the stories where this guy is hunting with a group of friends. They go to the same area all the time. They've been hunting for 30 years. They know their way around the woods. The guy goes hunting and they don't find him. They find his rifle propped up on the tree. They find his shoes a mile farther down, uphill sometimes in the opposite direction of safety.
It's the craziest
thing. It does
thing.
Not make any sense. People are like, oh yeah, when you get hypothermia, you'll start taking clothes up. But some of these cases, the people are gone in 30 minutes.
Yes.
Like you're not going to develop hypothermia in 30 minutes.
Like just out of your mind.
It's
crazy.
Strange. And then, you know, then they find the cases where they actually find people for whatever reason. They always seem to find the children. When adults go missing, they don't really find them. And then these kids and they're like, how did the kid survive? He's 3 years old, right?
He traveled 18 miles over two rivers and over a mountain. And here he is and his feet are clean.
Feet are clean.
You're like, yeah. What?
The shirt's put on backwards. You know, it's just odd circumstances. Just don't,
if you like going in the woods and you enjoy being in the outdoors and you enjoy sleeping restfully at night, don't think too much about this topic.
Well, that's
just leave it alone.
Yeah, I think about it every time I'm hunting by myself. I'm like, nah, that's not real. Then you're like, man, maybe that's real.
I've been on this land that we're hunting on now for what, 6 years, 7 years now? All over it. And there's still not a time that at least happens once a week where you kind of get a little creepy feeling where you're just like, ugh. And like we've said before, there have been sightings in and around the area where we're at for years.
Yeah.
It's still just, I've not heard any in a while. And there's a lot of people moved in and building stuff around there and out there and like that. And that may be what it was. But a few years back, there was sightings not far down the road from where we were, one crossing. An alleged Bigfoot cross.
Yeah, and I know a rancher that doesn't live too far from where we hunt, and they told me that they saw one out there when they were just like baling hay.
So it's just one of those deals. It's pretty strange. Speaking of strange, Philly, I got something here. Listen to this. It says it was about 3 years ago in November of 2012. So this has been a while back when I was working at a small gas station in Northeast Louisiana. This is going to be perfect for Halloween. Think about this. We were the only small shop and 24-hour service station near Bastrop, just off the highway. I worked the night shift and loved it. The sharing of stories with the traveling customers, that was when the rare customer showed up. It must have been around 2 a.m. I was cleaning the floors and locking the beer coolers when suddenly the lights went out. I pulled out my cell phone and used it as a guiding light until I made it back to the counter where I kicked on the gas generator. It lit up the parking lot, the bath, and the hall leading to the register. When I looked outside, I could just make out the movement of the trees across the street, but otherwise, it was pitch black. I turned on the radio and started listening to the local station, with its night owl DJ commenting on the heavy winds and cracking jokes between songs. Suddenly, I saw some figures in the dark. I could just make them out. They seemed to be a group of kids on bikes. There were three of them. Two of them dropped their bikes and made their way to the door where they just stood there staring at me. I just stared back for a moment, waiting for them to come in. They never did. I moved around the counter and opened the door. "What's up, guys? Out kind of late, aren't you?" I asked them, expecting them to come in. "Can we use your phone?" one asked, their heads tilted kind of low. I felt a little worried as I pulled my cell from my pocket and offered it to her. "Sure," She looked at me. That's when I saw her eyes. They were solid black, almost like ink-filled orbs. "No, I need the real one," she said. Her face twisted into an angry snarl. I pulled the door closed and flipped the locks. "Nope, no ma'am. You go home and get your mom's phone." They stared at me through the door for a minute longer before turning away and biking off. The next day, I had my boss check the cameras to get the pictures of the creepy kids, but the cameras had been off the whole time.
I was going to say, or static or something.
Now,
kinda like
cameras,
when Epstein went missing.
Kind of, yeah. And it says, now the cameras run off the generator instead of the hall lights, and I've never seen those kids again.
Well, first of all, when they're like snarled at me, the little kid, that's when they would have got a teep right to the center of their chest.
You
right?
Always Kabow. Say that. You're going to end up kicking the wrong little kid one day. He ain't going to be doing anything. He's just going to get smacked.
Well, shouldn't be on my property. Just trespassing.
Try to scare me. Stop scaring me.
Yeah.
That's the best way to get kicked in the face.
This Halloween, do not go around trying to be a black-eyed kid. That's a bad costume. You're going to end up getting hurt.
If you decide that that's the thing that you're going to do, make sure that you fill out your last will and testament before you start running around out there pretending to be a black-eyed kid.
Yeah, and if you have some really cool costumes, take a picture and send it to me on Instagram. I'd like to see those.
Heck yeah.
Of your kid. Kids or whatever. I love spooky costumes, and I'll show them to Luke. He would
Halloween
get
Halloween is just
that.
A fun time.
It is. Right?
It is a really fun. I tell you one thing. I always have a bad feeling about Halloween. When I was a real little, like 8 or 9 years old, I remember going to my grandparents here in Weatherford at the time and trick-or-treating with my cousin. He and I were just a few months apart, and we were trick-or-treating down through there, right up and down the street that my grandparents is on. This isn't back in the day where they just let us go. They was no adults.
Yeah,
we're like
yeah.
nine. They're just like, be careful. I remember.
Don't take any wooden nickels and stuff like that. Yeah.
My cousin and I getting jumped by like 5 or 6 older kids.
They stole your stuff.
They stole all of our candy.
Man.
Took every bit of it.
That was the breaks back
that
in the day.
That was how it went down, man. Right? You just ran back home crying because you didn't have any candy.
You didn't play the victim. You didn't start like a GoFundMe to help you get more Reese's pieces and stuff.
Heck no.
Speaking of Halloween candy, what's your favorite?
I don't.
Is it maintained the same over your life, or has it changed as you've aged? Because my favorite candies changed all the time.
I don't really have like a. I'm not like a huge candy guy.
Yeah, I'm not right? either. Yeah, I'm not either.
But the ones I like are like they're not really Halloween candies. Like I like Snickers bars. I like those every now and again. I like a Kit Kat. I still think because this is
Luke loves Kit Kats. I'm not a big Kit Kat guy.
I like
Luke
Kit
loves
Kats.
Them.
My favorite candy, though, probably if I just had to grab a candy and go, is the one that you and I grab every Friday before we sit down to play D&D.
Peanut M&M's?
Peanut M&M's.
Yeah, those are fantastic.
That's it. It's plain, it's simple, and that's just where I leave it.
I like those. I like Mr. Good Bars.
Oh, man, I haven't had one of those in
forever. Oh, I love them. They're plain, right? It's just chocolate
that's
and peanuts.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Basically, it's a Hershey's bar with peanuts. That's it.
Yeah, instead of just little round orbs, it's a flat bar. That's all it is.
And I love just a regular plain Hershey bar.
Yeah, plain Hershey's.
But I haven't had a good bar in forever.
And I like Scores. It's like a Heath bar, but a little different.
Yeah, dude. It's
English toffee.
Years,
I like that. I like the way it tastes.
Years.
It's like that mocha flavor to it.
I'm a big fan of caramel or toffee, so that's another reason I steer clear of all of that, because I'm like, boy, I could get addicted to that kind of stuff, so I just don't even keep it in the house.
My brother used to like those peanuts. You know, the ones like the size of your thumb?
Circus peanuts.
Yeah, circus peanuts. Yeah, they don't make those anymore?
Your nasty-ass brother used to also eat Peeps, too.
Still does.
God, I hate him so much bringing those. I remember him coming back to your house. We were kids, and he would have, like, he would save money to buy stacks of Peeps.
Yeah, around Easter every year.
Yeah, whatever box that he'd have, like, 6-8 boxes of Peeps. Oh, I hate those things.
I don't like anything with I don't like marshmallows, period. But when I was a kid, I did.
Because you didn't know any better.
Well, maybe. I don't prefer it anymore. Like, I used to love licorice when I was a kid, and I don't really care for it anymore.
I don't mind that, but I just don't like any of that texture. I think it's more of a texture thing with me as it is with flavors. I'm like, if the flavors are okay and the texture's good, I'm fine with it. But you start getting funky textures like those, what are they called, Twizzlers?
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I wouldn't give you $5 for every Twizzler on this planet.
My wife loves them. I don't eat them at all.
Well, look, I can already tell you your wife has poor judgment.
That's
true.
And poor taste, yes.
Yeah, I don't even need to know. I can look at you and tell that there's a problem with her.
Well, folks, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. If you want to call us, you can call us 888-393-2783. If you want to help us out, go over there and follow us on YouTube, write us a review wherever you listen to us.
Word.
All of that stuff
reviews
helps.
Reviews help. Keep them coming.
Yeah, let's not forget, we got an upcoming interview on Ducks Unlimited.
Yep.
Coming out, we're doing their Halloween special. I don't know when the show's going to air. I'm not in charge of that. It's their show. But I know we're going to be appearing on there. We were on there last year, and we had a good time. So we've been invited back. So that'll be cool, even though me and you aren't. Both of us don't duck hunt, but I'm a big fan of the franchise.
Heck yeah.
Let's not forget about our sponsors. If you want to get into wine and collecting wine and enjoying wine, you need to go to First Leaf. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/expanded to sign up, and you'll get your first six hand-curated bottles for just $44.95. That's tryfirstleaf.com/expanded. And Factor. Get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered to your door, ready in 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/expanded50 and use the code EXPANDED50, that's EXPANDED50, to get 50% off. That's code EXPANDED50 at factormeals.com/expanded50. For 50% off. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I don't really know. A little of it's up in the air. I know I'm supposed to go with my granddaughter. We're going to go watch them do the trick-or-treating and whatnot.
Yep.
Coming up. But that, other than that, I don't know that I actually have any nailed-down plans that don't involve hunting.
Right, yeah, it's
that's
that time.
That's pretty much it.
With
that's
the cooler it. Weather, yes. And now the rain's come through, it's going to be good. Yeah, I don't think I have any really big plans either. I got done taking care of my father while my mother was out of town, and so I don't have to do that. I'm sure my wife will find something for me to do. But
you want to go ahead and tell the people that always give us a hard time about calling your dad the human cockroach? You want to go ahead and tell them?
Well, he fell again. Busted his head open.
Not just busted his head open. He hit the bottom of the dresser and blew the trim off the bottom of the dresser with his skull.
And this is a dresser that was made in the 70s when they actually made them out of real wood, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean knocked a piece off the dresser.
Yeah, they took him to the...
You could see the skull.
They took him to the emergency room and they did a CT scan. No brain bleeds, nothing, no problem.
Nothing!
Got 5 stitches and he's back at home. Good as new. He's one tough cookie,
dude,
I'll tell you that.
I'm telling you. You know, he'll die in his sleep.
Probably.
That'll be what happens. You'll be like, really? All of this, and that really, sleep got him. Wow. He's hard to kill. He's hard to kill.
He is.
He is definitely hard to kill. What's Luke going as?
He's going as Ghostface, which is like the killer from the movie Scream.
Oh, that's a pretty simple one.
Yeah, he's getting simpler. He's turning into me.
Man, that is so good.
Keep it simple, right?
Because I am tired of getting ear beatings over the last few years when he was younger of like, where am I going to find all this?
Yeah, well, we'll see. He went to a school function, and him and a buddy, they were going to go as the Breaking Bad
duo. Oh, my God.
And Luke's character was not the, I don't know, I haven't seen that show in so long, Jesse Pinkman or whatever.
The young one, Jesse, Heisenberg, right?
Yeah, right, that was his friend. And I was just like, well, how are you going to dress like that?
Was he going to wear the yellow suit like they were cooking meth?
Yeah, that's what they did. At the school function, everybody was fine with it. Nobody said nothing.
I love it.
I thought they were going to get in trouble. No, nothing happened. So,
oh no, we're going as meth cooks for Halloween.
That's basically it.
Yeah, that's what they went for. That's awesome. My granddaughter is keeping it old school.
There you go.
Right? She's about 2.5 years old. She fell in love with something Disney related, just like her father did. She loves Toy Story.
Oh, yeah.
She watches Toy Story all the time. She was a big Moana fan. Now she's a big fan of Toy Story. She's going as Woody.
Okay.
That's who she wants to go as. Not the girl, Jessie. She wants to go as Woody. She was going to go as Buzz because she liked the wings.
Not going to lie, jetpack looks cool, right?
I'm not going to lie. Jetpacks are cool. So, yeah, that's what
she's going to get a picture of her as Woody and then post it on Instagram so everybody can see it.
I will. I may go. If we all dressed up to go, I said I was going to go as Yukon Cornelius.
You could pull that off.
My mother bought me the shirt that looks just like his shirt. I got the same color pants, the boots, the backpack. I just got to get a little like
ice axe. You
got to
get the pickaxe and you got to lick it.
You got to lick it when you stick it in the ground, and you got to get a red toboggan. Does anybody out there, that's what we need. We have some of the most amazing listeners.
Yeah,
there's some of them that I find where those people will be like crocheting, like wool. Like making wool, like toboggans, wool. I'm like, man, oh man. I got to find one of them that does that and order one of those. I need to get me a red toboggan so I can be Yukon Cornelius.
You were just telling me the other day you were going to make me some mittens.
I'm going to. We're going to make mittens. We're going to build some out of the deer that we kill this year. It's happening. I haven't tanned anything to make. I used to just have a bunch of deer hides laying around on stuff, right? But I never made them into anything. I'm making them into something this time.
Did you throw them all out?
No, we packed them up. I've got some out in the packed up, stuff like that. It's just things. Now, here's one thing I'm going to make you. You need a pair of buckskin pants to hunt in.
That would be cool. How about just like an apron that I could cook with?
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, right?
That'd be pretty awesome. Yeah, you're going to have to make some crazy buckskin stuff. It'd be fun.
And then somebody will think I'm a Wendigo or something walking through the woods.
Then I'm going to shoot him. I'll have an excuse.
All right, folks. That's about all the time we have for this episode. Please be safe out there. If you're trick-or-treating, be safe. Look both ways before you cross the street.
Make sure to check their air quotes candy.
Yeah.
You check their candy. They can't have too much of it.
Yeah, let them have a little fun. Be safe, y'all. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.